Welcome to the A to Z of Sex with me, Dr. Lori Beth. I'm an intimacy coach and psychologist. I created this show to explore the erotic alphabet, to help you learn more about desire and expressing your desires, discover ways to spice up your relationship and create that sizzling relationship you've always wanted. I do this through solid science, real life stories, and interviews with an exciting variety of sexperts. Listen in weekly as I share key strategies to help you create your ideal sexual life. Make sure you join us to access even more sexual strategies on my blog, A to Z of Sex. Access our monthly newsletter with subscriber-only offers at www.atozofsex.com. That's A-T-O-Z-O-F-S-E-X. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the A to Z of Sex. I'm Dr. Lori Beth, and I'm your host. We are working our way through the erotic alphabet one letter at a time. Just a reminder, this podcast deals with adult content. So if you don't have total privacy, you might want to put on some headphones. Today, the letter is P, and P is for polyamory. And joining me for this conversation is Anita Cassidy, who's an author, speaker, and activist. Welcome to the show, Anita.
Hi, Lori.
Hey. So I've done the basics of polyamory before, and I will do a little bit to describe them now. But today, I think we wanted to kind of delve deeper into the sort of things that are normal in this lifestyle, to kind of normalize what people do. Yeah. And to take away from that focus, I think that what you see in the media a lot is a focus on this being sort of titillating and it being about sex and being about people being greedy and wanting more and not actually the focus on what the reality is, which is that people want more connections and more love and more intimacy in their life. And yes, that includes more sex, but it's not
It's a package deal, isn't it? Rather than it all being focused on the one thing that the media seems to make most things about that it doesn't really understand, which is about sex or about problems.
Yeah. And one of the things I find interesting is that we've now got a plethora of shows dealing with lifestyles in which people have more than one partner. But most of them are really negative. So most of them focus on Latter-day Saints shoot-offs, where people have more than one wife. So we've got sister wives, and we've got more sister wives. escaping polygamy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And there's all these, you know, all these reality programs about the negative sides of having more than one partner.
And actually, what's interesting there as well, the emphasis is on men choosing to have more women around them. Whereas, yeah, interestingly, my experience of polyamory and my experience really is coming from kind of London and being in London and meeting polyamorous people around London and the Southeast at the moment has been that actually more often than not, it's the woman that drives the choice. It's the woman that turns around and says to a current partner or to new partners, I'm polyamorous or I'm non-monogamous and I'm choosing to operate my life in this way, or this is what I want for myself, because I think intuitively they understand that what they want is more connection, more intimacy and more support. And it's not, obviously more sex is wonderful, but or can be wonderful, but it is about the abundance of connection and not just the physical stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting because women as a rule seek out emotional connection more in any event. And so we tend to be less isolated. We cultivate more friendships at a deep level. And the research bears that out still. I mean, it's been changing. Men are doing more of that emotionally connecting. But traditionally, men's emotional connections usually are with their partners.
Yeah.
So when you think about people deciding to be non-monogamous, it's overwhelming to be somebody's only emotional support.
Yeah.
And so it's not surprising that women drive that choice.
Yeah, because they feel perhaps overwhelmed by being the only, and also they want to reach out to, they want to kind of deepen and strengthen and allow the connections that they're developing anyway, quite naturally sometimes, onto another level. I think that was certainly the driver for me. I think it's, you know, it's not, I tend to, the word polyamory really helped me get where I am now, but I tend to use it less and less now, more because I just try and bring a lot more intention and a bit more awareness to the relationships I have around me. And some of those might be really close friendships. Some of them might be sexual connections. But it is more about, it's about the fact that when my, one of my partners is really busy or stressed or unwell, or just has a lot on their plate, I know that I've got like 10 plus people that I can pick the phone up to or arrange to see that can give me pretty much the same kind of emotional support that they could.
Yeah.
And I think that's really powerful for me. I don't, having been someone that's been the sole support, but also having seen my parents go through, you know, go through a loss and lose, when you've lost that one person that you've relied on, you're very vulnerable all of a sudden. And actually having that broad support network can just make loss and big changes, sudden changes perhaps in your relationship, a lot easier to deal with.
Oh yeah. It's always interesting to me that I look at kind of the trends and what's going on based on who comes through my consulting room door. And what I find recently is I see a lot of polyamorous people who are struggling with relationships that should be non-monogamous, but are actually kind of acting monogamous.
I've met a lot of people that are in a similar boat, where you've got, there's a lot of kind of talk about being polyamorous, but there's so much conditioning and so much kind of fear around really letting people go and giving people that freedom, that actually what you end up with is often, I mean, certainly in my experience, people in maybe one or two very monogamous looking relationships, and then all the conflicts that then get caused there because people aren't really looking at the deeper, at the deeper kind of fears and insecurities that sit underneath keeping that relationship looking fairly monogamous.
Yeah, and I that's an interesting one for me, which is talking about the idea of actually being more conscious about relationships, as you said a little bit ago. I mean, that's what should come automatically along with being non-monogamous by virtue of the fact that you actually have to think about it.
You have to make choices all the time.
Right.
But
it doesn't necessarily.
No, it doesn't. People just, it can be too easy, can't it? To just think, oh, well, I get a boyfriend and a girlfriend now, or I get two girlfriends now, or two boyfriends now. And there, all the load is spread. And that's me, you know, I'm covered. But you still, the learning's not there, is it? And I think for me, polyamory is, and that choice is so much about bringing so much more awareness to everything you're doing and to question the kind of assumptions you're making and to kind of push through those. I mean, gently and slowly, one has to take it a step at a time. But it's I get really frustrated when I see people calling themselves poly, and then you're like, but there's so many kind of frameworks and rules and hard lines in place that don't look like they're going away anytime soon. And I just think whether from any other angle, this looks like a monogamous relationship with a bit of sexual freedom, which is fine, but, you know, don't call it polyamory. You know, call it an open relationship or a sexually flexible relationship. But I think it's that, but maybe it's a step. Maybe those people are coming to you and they're on a journey towards, you know, they're on a journey of increasing openness.
Some are and some aren't. And I think I'm not invested in whatever way they go. They can be monogamous.
I haven't got the energy to do that.
Right. But my investment actually is for them to look at their own expectations and their behavior and look at what is automatic for them.
Yes. Those kind of unspoken reflexive responses.
Like, we must be, because we're in a relationship, we must be moving towards living together.
Ah, yes.
Right. Yeah. If I'm in a relationship with you and we fall in love and, you know, we do the relationship from a distance bit, in this case, I'm not even referring to long distance. I mean, you're not living in the same house.
Sure.
And, you know, and after a period of time, people start getting antsy for what's the next step.
Yeah. There needs to be, people often get caught up in that need to see escalation and increase. I've been seeing Andrea for 2.5 years now, and we still only see each other once a week, pretty much. There hasn't been an escalation in the amount of time we spent together. We have started taking some longer holidays together, but that's like once a year. And what we've never felt the need to do is gradually kind of increase the amount of time we spend together. We might choose to spend a bit of extra time together over a long weekend, that kind of thing, but the expectation's not there that because it's been X amount of months or years, all of a sudden we need to reflect that by the amount of time we spend together.
Yeah, and that actually takes thought, because otherwise the pressure always there to do that. And often the arguments I get for why you would want to do that are really interesting.
Okay.
Where people feel, well, it's more expensive to live alone.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Rational.
Right? I mean, I'm not going to argue about that, because you may well be right. It is more expensive to live alone.
And actually in London right now, it is very difficult to live alone. And I do get that, I think. But I mean, for myself, I often wonder why people don't look at living with friends more. You know, most of the people I know that are happy with their living arrangements, like really content with their living arrangements, are people that have chosen to live with friends. And I think you've got that barrier then, a slight distance, so that your living arrangements aren't tied in with your emotions and your romantic feelings about someone, because those things can change, whereas you are always going to need somewhere to live. So I think it does cause other problems when people see that I have to be the next step and make certain commitments, perhaps by reflex, like you said, rather than intentionally and consciously thinking about, yes, a project we want to do together is to buy a property or to cohabit. It is just it's a reflexive thing.
It is, and I think it's so important for people to actually start breaking this down and thinking about what goes into their relationships and what they want to choose, because that is what polyamory is about, at least for me. For me, it was about making different choices about my relationships and knowing that I wanted more than one person in my life that I would share love with, and that included also sharing sex. And that was actually really important to me, even when I wasn't doing that. There's the other part of it. If you're polyamorous, you're supposed to have more than one relationship all the time.
Yes, you're not doing it properly unless
that's
you
right.
show people a couple of extra bodies floating around.
That's right.
It's bizarre, isn't it? And I found myself feeling the same way sometimes. Now, I have really only been seeing Andrea for 2.5 years. I'm getting to know other people, but I haven't been in another relationship. And I did spend a lot of time last year, you know, feeling quite anxious about that. It was a bit like, oh, I'm not doing this properly. Now, how can I talk about this and identify in this way? But after 5 minutes of thinking about that, you realize how crazy it is. It's like, just because you're not having, if you're a straight person not having sex right now, or not with a girlfriend or a boyfriend right now, doesn't mean you're no longer straight. Doesn't mean you're no longer, you know, kind of a vape. It's just crazy. You realize that it's a crazy thing to think. But some people do get caught up on that.
Yeah, they get really caught up in this idea. And people will be quite strident about it. Well, you know, you're not in a love relationship with more than one person. You know, you're only having sex with other people. That's non-monogamy. It's not polyamory. It's like,
oh, right. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Really? And, you know, and a relationship, and what a relationship looks like.
Yeah.
Right. A relationship means I have to see people
X amount
every
of times.
Week, yeah. X amount of time. I have to talk to them. Yeah. X amount of time.
Yeah.
And so I can't say that I'm in a relationship with somebody that I might see twice a year.
And actually, people feel also, I think some people that I've met have felt quite uncomfortable calling what they and I have a relationship, when actually clearly we are in relationship with each other. I mean, the language kind of gives you that already. But I'm like, well, even if we're just friends, we're still a relationship. It's just a friendship relationship. And I think, you know, I tend to take all of those very seriously. I think for me, the kind of, you know, I weave in that kind of relationship anarchy concept into poly as well, and just see actually all my relationships are important, not just the love and the romantic and the sexual ones. But, you know, I just think all these people are important to me. not just the romantic ones.
Well, and yes, and I think that there are hierarchies that are built into our understanding of monogamy that actually don't need to be there. Yeah. So people who are monogamous who are listening to this can make some changes in their relationship without becoming non-monogamous. So the idea of where a friendship fits.
Yeah.
You know, in classical versions of monogamy, your husband or your wife comes first.
And takes precedence over every other connection to the point where you're not allowed to invest any time in other friendships and connections.
And even when you're allowed to invest time in other connections, it's less.
Less time, but also that is also disposable, as in if something else came up, for example, then I suppose the assumption would often be that, and people do this quite frequently, let the friend down and say, well, I can't do this because she needs me at home or he needs me here. So actually the friendship always feels, and it's always made to feel, definitely like much less important.
Yeah, and so this is family, you know, this is your romantic partner, this is family. When does your romantic partner become family, you know? Yeah. And it's the whole thing is here and everything else is over there. Yeah. And I actually think that part of what's driven the whole idea of chosen family is a need to really highlight that these relationships are important.
Yes.
You know, that this isn't just a friendship. This is somebody.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Just friends is that classic kind of dismissive sounding phrase that implies that anything that's just a friendship can't be as important as something else, can't be as important as family, can't be. I mean, I love some of my friends so much, and I can't imagine life without them around. And life would be very different and much, you know, kind of quieter and sadder without them around, in the same way that it would be if I lost a partner or a member of my family. It's just, it is the same, you know, the intensity is the same. And I think people can benefit so much from kind of bringing that variety and sharing that sort of time and space in their relationship outside, you know, and actually letting the air in basically by spending that time and valuing that time elsewhere.
And and valuing time with people who also may have different values and ideals than they do.
Yeah. So encouraging difference and being receptive to difference.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's where poly meets that need sometimes. I mean, there are certain things that I like to do that Andrea's not so keen on doing and that friends of mine aren't so keen on doing. And I know that I've got a range of people that I can do certain things with. There tends to be a lot of commonality and there tends to be a lot of threads running through all of those, but it's nice to, I love the variety. I think that's what really appeals to me, is the fact that I can spend time with people and the energy is different and the conversations are different, their experiences are different, and you just get such a richer experience of life and the possibilities that life has through all.
It's certainly one of the things that I love about polyamory is the ability to engage with variety and learn more and experience more. And also, you know, when in the olden days, right, in the olden days of monogamy, you would have to make lots more compromises and choices about what you couldn't do. Yeah. So people partner and they give stuff up. I'm not saying you don't ever have to give stuff up, because here's the big leveler. Time is the big leveler. Yes. We only ever have so much. You know, so we always have to give things up or make compromises. But if you are looking at a traditional monogamous framework, when people partner, they want to spend more time with their partners. I mean, I get lots of couples coming in, monogamous couples, where the big complaint is they don't spend any time with me, right? They're out with their friends all the time.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, there's an expectation that you will spend significant time with your romantic partner. And when they do that, if they don't live in each other's pockets by having everything in common, that means people give things up.
Yeah.
And often things that have been quite important to them.
Yes.
You know, you meet somebody and you're an amateur musician, and that takes a lot of time. It's a lot of time. Even to be an amateur musician, if you're going to play with a group of people, if you play on your own, not so much time. But if you're going to play in an orchestra, for example, or a quartet or something, you've got to do a lot of practice in order to keep up. And then you have engagements and you meet somebody who's not interested in music at all.
Yeah.
Who doesn't understand that you need to spend an hour and a half a day playing. You know, and so I see people.
I suppose you get caught up to all too often. What happens is that new relationship energy phase comes in where hobbies get dropped, friends get dropped, things get sidelined for 6 months, maybe 12, maybe a little bit longer sometimes. And that whirlwind of emotion and excitement. And then, you know, the relationship's established, the monogamous partnership is established. And then what happens is you do have that, you know, you do need those things again, but it then feels like you've broken a promise. You've set this expectation up that you spend all this time together, and it can be hard then to make changes that it looking like a loss to someone that realized this was so important because you weren't doing this so much before. And again, it's about those expectations and about managing change and the shift, and actually having someone go slightly further away and be separate then brings them back a lot happier and kind of keeps the kind of air coming into the relationship.
Well, it gives you guys something new to talk about too.
Yeah, need to talk about, but also that kind of renewed energy that you get spending time doing your thing. But all too often I hear people sharing stories about just feeling threatened by that a partner feels threatened by time spent away from the relationship. And whether that's, you know, people in their early 20s, you know, resenting a girl going out with girlfriends or a boy going out with boyfriends, and all those cliche stories we hear about, you know, the guy can't go on the hunting trip or the golf trip because the wife's jealous, that kind of thing, and vice versa. And you just think, actually, by gripping on that tight, that's what causes so many problems. You know, that can cause so many problems. Whereas I think for me, the whole making those intentional choices about how often you see each other, agreeing a framework that works for you both there and then, it just, and the fact that it will change, you know, actually sometimes it won't feel so good. Maybe once a week doesn't feel so good. And then all of a sudden, actually, a little bit often would be nicer. And then you kind of, you have to shift and let it ebb and flow as well.
That's important, which is the ebb and flow of it rather than a straight expectation. Yes. So I think about like the escalation things is going up, you know, more time. And then you get married and have kids and blah, 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 whatever it is.
Yeah, that's less permanent. It's fixed then, isn't it? It's all the time and it's for always.
Yeah. Yep. And then always interestingly to me, people put no work into it anymore. So
that's like no longer. Yeah. It's done now. The box has been ticked. It's all done. It's all done. We're here now. There we go.
We've arrived. We need to do nothing else, which of course is rubbish and is the recipe for a relationship breakdown later on. But that actually there are other ways in which you can ebb and flow.
Yeah.
You can spend more time and then less time and more time and then less time. You know,
it's a bit more relaxed, it's a bit more free flowing. It's based on what's happening at that particular point in time rather than following a kind of script almost about the fact that it has to move through these linear stages. You know, maybe you would live with someone for a little while and then move out again because it's the fact that you allow it to be that much more flexible. And I think conscious choices about relationships and polyamory do, for me, that's very much what they're about, is that kind of flexibility. And that ability to say, yes, you know, this is a sexual thing right now, or it's not so much, or I'm going to spend more time on here for now and then over there. But you're always talking about it. You're always talking about the fact that actually for the next couple of months, my studies are priority, or for the next few months, my family are a priority. And you talk about the fact that you've shifted things slightly and talk about how it makes each other feel, and work through those things as you go, rather than, like, say, making assumptions based on old decisions and old and sort of unconscious expectations.
And that's the idea. I mean, the idea is that it's conscious, and if we're going to have expectations, we actually set them consciously.
Yeah.
And we discuss them. However, I'll tell you a secret.
Go on.
Lots of people who are being non-monogamous in many different ways don't do that.
No.
I know you didn't know that, right?
Polyamorous people that don't have open conversations about expectations. Oh my God, Laurie, I'm so stunned.
I know.
And it's, the thing is, it's just because it's really hard. That's why.
Exactly.
It's really hard to sit there and go, do you know what? Like once a week is fine. Or actually once a week isn't enough. Both of those sentences are hard to say.
Yep.
If you think the other person isn't likely to agree with it.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to look at the difficult stuff, you know, and to say, actually, do you know what? We look really monogamous from the outside. And why might that be?
I'm known for being somebody who really pushes people to look at the difficult, not just because I'm a therapist, but just in general, you know, in friendships, because I always pushed myself to look at the difficult parts. And the reason for doing that is because that's how you get through them.
Yes.
You know, and that's how you make conscious, positive changes in your life, is by looking at the difficult stuff. Not looking, that la, 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 I'm not listening thing doesn't work.
It works for a little while because it makes you feel that better for a teeny while. That's why people do it, because it feels good for a minute. A bit like when you reset the alarm and think, I'm not going to get up and do my workout this morning. It feels great for a minute. And then certainly my experience, if I decide not to get up and just get on with my morning, or I don't feel like writing, or there's certain things that I've committed to do that I choose not to do for a little while, it feels great. And then you just get this nagging feeling all the whole time that you didn't do something you were committing to, that now you feel, it's just this uneasy. It's an uneasy feeling of something not addressed, something not dealt with. And it does, it's going to come back, you know, and that's the problem. It's fine to, you know, it's going to come back, whether you like it.
Yeah, and it does. I mean, there's no good to push things down and push them away. There's a trend recently, again, for suggesting that you don't need to talk about difficult things.
Really?
Yeah. And there are some therapists who fully believe that, you know, looking at trauma and looking at difficult things and talking about them is unhelpful because people get re-traumatized. And I completely disagree with that.
Sure.
Because, you know, 30 years experience tells me, and a bunch of research as well, that you can push things down and push them away and not talk about them, but ultimately
they're going to come back.
They come up.
It might not be for a while, but it'd be sometime. It always.
And it might not be direct, and people forget that. You know, I mean, it might not come out directly. It might come out indirectly.
It'll be something else. It'll come out in some other way you're not expecting, or in some manifest itself as an illness. It's really, you know, I think that. You know, this framework for me is all about looking at, is having the support actually to look at the difficult
That's
stuff.
That's right.
And seeing it as a journey through the difficult stuff to a place where there is more joy, like genuine joy and love and connection, on a basis of complete honesty and openness, you know, kind of like you've dealt with the difficult stuff. And every time my own experience of going through the difficult stuff, you know, and I've talked about this previously, my own experience is that every time I work through with a partner or a friend, even something difficult, you know, have a difficult conversation, talk through difficult feelings, difficult experiences, we get so much closer and the relationship feels lighter and stronger and just so much happier, you know, and that, you know, just better, you know, I hate using those kind of qualitative phrases, but it's just stronger and lighter and it feels so good to work through those things. It doesn't feel good at the time, and I get that, and that's why people don't do it. But after, like on the other side of that, there's so much joy. And that's what I think, you know, for me, poly is all about, you know, learning to take those difficult steps to the other side of that.
Yeah. It's terribly cliche, but you do your work, you get the rewards.
Yeah.
We don't get handed things for free in that way. You actually have to work for the rewards. And, you know, some people be like, oh, why? Or it's talking about work. And and because I don't take that attitude that everything is all light and airy and fluffy. Yeah. And that one doesn't have to do anything. I mean, there are effortless connections. Don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
I've got people.
There are effortless times.
Yep.
You know, you get more of those with the work you do on the unconscious expectations and the difficulties and the challenges. You know, and almost invariably, like you say, things always come back somewhere else. And you're just kind of spoiling the future almost, aren't you? By not addressing something now, it's kind of setting things up to just be spoiled later on.
Well, yeah, you're limiting yourself. You're limiting your paths. By not dealing with that stuff when it's difficult. And one of the nice things for me about polyamory is that the depth of friendship that you can have, even when you're not having a sexual relationship with somebody.
The depth of that connection.
Yeah, and that can be a relationship that you give as much time to as you give to a sexual partner.
Yeah.
That's something that you don't have to define. A relationship is this.
Sure.
Right. This person is a lover, and that's what they are, and a lover is, and here are the expectations for a lover. You get to actually say, well, lovers come in all different shapes and sizes, and some of them I have really good emotional relationships with. Some of them I go and play golf with.
Mm-hmm.
Mind, I never go and play golf, but but some of them I go and walk with in the nature, and some of them I eat popcorn and watch TV with, and some of them. So they don't. There isn't a sort of standard, this is what a lover looks like, this is what a friend looks like, this is what a family member looks like.
It's just those individuals, aren't they, and the way in which your relationship is right now.
And I think because I chose a relationship style that isn't standard, then I get to make those definitions more easily.
Absolutely.
People deal with me making those definitions more easily because it's non-standard.
Yeah.
Whereas if you are engaging in monogamous relationships, it's sometimes harder to get a monogamous partner to deal with altering definitions.
Yeah.
Of relationship.
It's just not built into the way those things work, is it? I mean, it's very common these days for people to start off dating and it be taken as a given that you're both still dating elsewhere, but once often the conversation about exclusivity is had without talking about what that means and what would happen if that changed. And I think for me, what polyamory does is put change and the possibility of change in the middle of the room straight away, you know, puts it on the table and says things might change. And, you know, I've got a hope that it doesn't. I've got a hope that this friendship or this connection stays like this or brings joy to us both most of the time for as long as possible. But you bring that idea of change right in from the off, because it says there is the possibility here that things will shift, and we'll talk about that. And you make that commitment to always talking about how you feel. And you don't ignore the possibility of change. You make it a big part of enjoying what you have right now and making the most of it, but also kind of always being honest and talking about how you're feeling moving forwards.
And it's not just the idea of change within the relationship, but making sure that you make space for your own growth.
Yeah, and your own change.
Yeah,
which is a big part of this for me, that idea that the more people you meet, the more experiences you have, the more one looks at our stuff and does the work, then you do change and grow. I mean, it might take time, but that's part of the joy of it for me, just kind of that sense of I understand myself better, I get myself better, and I get to enjoy bouncing different parts of myself off other people and discover those and experience those. But I do feel like I've kind of gone through that the being in multiple relationships and having multiple connections has really accelerated my understanding of myself, but also accelerated and kind of increased my creativity and my confidence as well. It's kind of just brought so much, which I think actually just having one relationship can do a lot for you, but it just it's limited by virtue of being one thing. Yeah. It is limited.
Yeah, definitely. So where can people find you and what are you doing at the moment?
So I'm currently writing my second novel. I had a book published in January. It's called Appetite. It can be found on Amazon. So that's gathering 5-star reviews at a pace, which is great. And I write regularly on topics such as conscious relationships, polyamory, but also change and loss and food on my website, which is anitacassidy.uk. And I'm looking at doing some talks in the autumn around food and relationships and writing, finishing my new book. So lots going on. And just enjoying London, really. I mean, trying to enjoy the summer and trying to enjoy what, you know, all the relationships and connections I have in my life are bringing to me, which is, you know, usually, as well as all the challenges, lots of fun.
Great. So where can people find you if they want to connect?
You can connect with me at anitacassidy.uk or go and look at nomoradicalrelationships.club and have a look at that and get in touch through there. And yeah, so the website, anitacassidy.uk, is the best place to find me right now.
I would encourage people to go have a look at Nomo as well. And if you have not seen the book Appetite and you've not read it, go pick it up. It's actually a fabulous summer read.
I was about to say,
It really is. It's a really good summer.
It's not just the ice lolly on the cover, which also has a bit of a secret to it, but also just the fact that, it's about change.
It's about change and about relationships. And
very much of the moment, I think, is talking about food, it's talking about relationships, it's talking about the challenges of managing a monogamous marriage and the mistakes that people make trying to navigate the frustrations that those things often hold.
And I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm a big reader, so I read year round, but I know a lot of people
use the summer as their reading time, don't they? Very much. I get that.
They don't feel they have time to read or work doesn't allow it. So it is a great summer read. You can find it on Amazon. And the details and the link to the book will be in the podcast notes. So today we were talking about polyamory and also in general conscious relationships and all the good things you can gain when you do your work. If any of this triggered you or if you just have a question or a comment, please write to me at drloribeth@azofsex.com. That's drloribeth @atozofsex.com. I thank you all for joining me this week for the A to Z of Sex. Do write in with questions and visit both websites, https://azofsex.com and https://the-intimacy-coach.com. There you can learn about alternative types of sexual relationships, different relationship styles, and how to create that ideal lasting set of relationships for you. For a free 30-minute session with me, head over to theazofsex.com and click on the button that says Book Now. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please, 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 please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and or Stitcher. And do please subscribe. And for the next 2 weeks, if you leave me a review, you will get a 25% off voucher for any of my services. If you want to access extra writings, podcast videos, and to know where you can see me live, sign up for my regular mailing by emailing me at drloribeth@azofsex.com or picking up my free ebook, 74 Movies, at https://drloribeth.leadpages.co/intimacy-coach-opt. Wow. Join me next week when the letter will be Q. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in. You were just listening to the A to Z of Sex. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review here on iTunes and make sure you head over to www.atozofsex.com. That's A-T-O-Z-O-F-S-E-X. To subscribe to my free newsletter to help you keep your sex life sizzling. Stay tuned for upcoming weekly episodes as we work our way through the sexual alphabet to discover the wide world of sex, sexuality, desire, and intimacy. Knowledge gives you the power to create relationships that bring you satisfaction and joy. Hope to see you next week.